You're listening to EPN, the ePodcast Network.
Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network, your channel for exclusive interviews with entrepreneurs, small business owners, and some of the world's top executives who share business strategies and insights that can all help you build your business, leading to your business success. And now, broadcasting from anywhere between Brazil, South America to Los Angeles, California, it is your host, Eric Dye.
Once again, this is Eric Dye, and welcome to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Today, we are speaking with author Jeff DeGraff, who is both an advisor to Fortune 500 companies and a professor at the Ross School of Business at the University of Michigan. His simultaneously creative and pragmatic approach to making innovation happen has led clients and colleagues to dub him the Dean of Innovation. He is the author of multiple books. Mr. DeGraff, a pleasure to have you with us today on Enterprise Radio.
Thanks for having me on, Eric.
And you're more than welcome. So let's start with this question. What is constructive conflict to kick things off today?
Well, you know, when you start looking at the places on the planet that produce the most innovation, you'll notice that they have one thing in common, which is they're highly diverse. But they're diverse in a way that people work together, taking all of the differences that they have and purposefully creating hybrids out of them. So the death of innovation, Eric, is apathy. What innovation needs is generative energy, which comes from people with different ideas, respecting each other, of course, personally, but challenging those ideas to come up with hybrid synthetic ideas or new ideas, what we call innovation.
Also, if you would, what is the creative power of constructive conflict and how should it be harnessed by businesses today?
Well, if you think about a business, at any given time, a business has these very different kind of forces. And they're not really personality forces, are they? They're forces of the market. So when you start a business, you have to have a lot of shots on goal. You have to widen the approach. That's why venture capitalists give everybody a little bit of money at the beginning. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to feel their way forward, accelerate the failure cycle, and figure out what works. Now, that's the beginning. But in the middle of a business, you got to make a solid business plan. You got to focus. You also have to get the right people on board and sell to the right people. Very different approach. And at the end of a business, when it begins to scale or become mature, you have to have efficiencies and scalable processes. Now, I want you to think about in any organization, whether it's small or whether it's large, these things all have to coexist. And some of them are going to be more optimal in some situations and less optimal in others. So, for example, if I'm building a biotech, I better have a pretty radical spectrum of innovation because I'm really trying to unlock the secrets of nature. But if I'm, you know, if I've got an auto parts company and I'm a tier two supplier, I'm really not unlocking the secrets of nature. I'm trying to figure out how to make things better, cheaper, and faster. So in any company, these things have to coexist, and they can either ignore each other, fumble as they try and hand off between the various sort of situations, or they can engage each other. And when they engage each other, that's when they come up with new ways of doing things.
And taking that a little further, why can constructive conflict heal your creative power?
Well, you see, when everybody agrees that everybody's doing all the same thing, not much happens, is there? You know, we just get kind of elaborations, and all the good people are like us, and all the good processes are like us. But organizations that have two functions. The first function is to maintain its equilibrium, to show regular revenue. And that actually eliminates innovation. Remember, Eric, innovation is a form of deviation. It's a form of variance. It's different. If it was the same, it wouldn't be innovation. So the second thing an organization has to do is it has to figure out how to grow. So what it's got to do is it's got to take these different areas. So let's take one for example. Think about marketing for a minute. Marketing is all about speculating new channels and trying to get into new locations and trying to do things in a very different way so that there's not a lot of prescriptive things. They're kind of inventing it as they go along. But once they sell things, think about manufacturing that has to have kind of a turnkey way of doing things, has to make sure that it's got enough supply chain in order to make that product or it operationally is capable of applying that service, that professional service. Those two things look like they're just stylistically different, but they're actually not. One of them is trying to create this radical variation, and the other one is trying to eliminate it. So it's not a difference of style. It's actually one is trying to destroy the other. And when we actually look at things like stock prices, what we start noticing is when we look at the top indexes of innovation, they've only ever beaten the growth benchmark, which is what's called the Russell 2500 on Wall Street. They've only ever beaten it one time in 25 years, once out of about 400 shots on goal. When we start looking at these oppositional things happening at the same time, it's only lost six times to the Russell 2500. So this isn't just about I'm an ENTP or an INFJ. This is about how firms collectively get beyond just keeping their equilibrium and actually growing.
Great insight there today. We are joined by author Jeff DeGraff, who is both an advisor to Fortune 500 companies and a professor at the Ross School of Business at the University of Michigan here on Enterprise Radio, a part of the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Now, continuing on, why should you embrace conflict?
Well, first of all, it's unavoidable, isn't it? think about your life. Think about, your family and your friends. Healthy families and healthy friends have conflict, and there are two types of conflict. And incidentally, Eric, both produce innovation. The negative type of conflict produces innovation, although I think we'd like to try and avoid it. Think about your personal life. When do people really, really change? They get a divorce, or they lose their health, or they go bankrupt, right? They lose their job. They change because the risk of trying something radical and the reward of staying where they're at is reversed. Think of it like a bell curve. People don't change in the middle. They change at the edges. So conflict is going to make you innovate one way or the other. All I'm proposing is that this conflict can be done in a constructive way. And what it really means is you have to do a few things to perpetuate it constructively. Obviously, you want to respect people. But more importantly, you want to challenge ideas, which really takes us out of kind of the we're all going to be aligned. Great. If you're all going to be aligned, that's great. You're going to be able to have equilibrium, but you're probably not going to grow. If you want constructive conflict, first you have to assemble a diversity of perspectives. Look at any of the 30 places on the planet that produce almost all the innovations that drives GDP. Look at Silicon Valley. Look at Tel Aviv. Look, I live in this little city called Ann Arbor that has more venture capital per person than any city in the United States right now. And it's significantly more diverse than any place within 30 miles. And if you go 30 miles outside, it looks completely different. The second, you have to engage in the conflict. How many companies have you ever been in that have incredible passive-aggressive behavior? People who don't agree, they don't have a shared vision, but they never have the conflict that basically drives them to the next level. You have to establish with these groups a shared goal or vision, a sense of destiny, if you will. Where are we going together? Because we do need each other. And finally, you use the conflict to create these hybrid solutions. So instead of avoiding it, what you're really trying to do is to immerse yourself in it in a constructive way. And the opposite of constructive conflict is apathy. And whether you like it or not, in all your relationships, you're going to have conflict. The question is, what are you going to do with it?
And that is a good question. Now, is there a process to embrace creative conflict and make sure it's effective for your business?
Yeah, there is. Let me give you just a couple pieces of advice on this. One. Think of the people who work for you like superheroes, right? And superheroes like the Fantastic Four, right? They're not all fantastic in the same way. And that every strength somebody's going to bring is also going to bring a weakness. So the first thing is when you start putting people around you who are different than you, who have different ideas than you, you have to understand they're also going to bring a downside and they're also going to be slightly irritating. Right? These are not things that you can design out because the strength brings a weakness. Now, the second piece to this is know when to put which players into the game. Now, I talk about the four types of worldviews, which exist, of course, at both the level of the individual, but also at the level of the organization. So know, for example, that the create point of view or the artist point of view is going to be great at the beginning of projects. They love ambiguity. They love to make it up as they go along. Know that the opposite of that, the control point of view or the engineering point of view, are going to be great at the other end of the project when it has to scale. So let me give your listeners an example. One of our students here at Michigan, Larry Page, created this little company called Google, and he's very much the artist worldview. his partner, Serge, is very much the engineering point of view. And you're going to see this over and over in these kind of pairings. So you want to put people together who aren't alike. Of course, the third worldview is the worldview that we're most associated with when we talk about business, which is the compete or the athlete point of view. And these are kind of the hard chargers, the MBAs, you know, the men and women who pursue money. And finally, their opposite is the collaborator, the sage point of view. And when you're putting this together in your organization, I have a caution for you, which is boomers, baby boomers like me, are traditionally the compete point of view. We had to compete for everything. We get mad when everybody gets the ribbon, right? On the opposite, our millennial children are very much part of the sage point of view, where they share everything. So you're trying to put these two groups together in the right places of the organization, at the right situation and at the right time. And finally, instead of trying to get everybody to agree on everything, what you're trying to do is make the conflict normal or normative, saying healthy organizations have these discussions. We're respecting people, but of course we're challenging the ideas. So no safe places, no trigger words. We're engaging respectfully, but we're doing it to get to some place together that we couldn't get there individually.
Definitely an interesting topic, and certainly appreciate your coming out and bringing focus to this as well. Before you go, in conclusion, any closing thoughts, a takeaway, or a final tip in regards to our conversation today?
Well, I wrote a book about this called The Innovation Code, The Creative Power of Constructive Conflict, and there's a number of tips in there. I would say the biggest thing for people who are entrepreneurs and trying to do things in an innovative way would be to experiment with it. Look at different combinations until these conflicts, when they become normative, actually start producing the types of innovations that you're looking for. And remember, if you want your company to grow, everything in this world costs something. What are you willing to give up to get what you actually desire?
Thank you in all regards. We really have appreciated your bringing focus to conflict and all that you offer here today per your expertise. If you would tell our listeners where they can get more information on you and how they could purchase the Innovation Code or any of your other books.
Yeah, Amazon, everything's on Amazon. And then jeffdegraff.com. And there's a ton of free stuff. And there's also a free assessment, which I think last year 28,000 or 30,000 people took it. I think it's got to be one of the largest innovation assessments in the world.
And that alone is quite impressive. Again, Mr. DeGraff, it's been our pleasure to have had you, and thanks for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio. Certainly wish you all the best.
Thank you so much, Eric. Have a good day.
And you as well. We've been speaking with author Jeff DeGraff, who is both an advisor to Fortune 500 companies and a professor at the Ross School of Business at the University of Michigan. And for all the details and for contact, visit jeffdegraff.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Check out our new live location, as we are now streaming live around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live, with a new app coming soon to accompany our live stream in the coming weeks. You can also access our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio and the TuneIn Radio app as well for your listening convenience. And as always, we do thank you for tuning in.
Thanks again for listening to Enterprise Radio here on the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. To subscribe for future programming, simply visit epodcastnetwork.com.
This is the ePodcast Network.